Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I am Eastern. When this is being aired, I am back in the air, returning to the fair United States of America, God willing, from Australia tour. And I'm feeling as a premonition that the tour has been incredible. And I will speak to it and give you lots of stories and hopefully new podcasts and so forth, probably in the next podcast. I just had to get some of these in the bank before I left because I want to make sure everything got to you in a timely manner because it's really important. Hence my sarcasm there. But I like regularity. It's part of my nature and my being. This week, I have a fun conversation with Pia Luzzi. Pia is an artist and a performer and a singer and a songwriter. And she's someone that I ran across many years ago at a festival, which we talk about briefly at the beginning. And I hadn't seen her since, but just someone I sort of tracked and knew of. And she popped into my head and I thought, oh, it'd be fun to talk to her because she's got a unique viewpoint and angle on music and kind of the music that she creates, particularly that she does a lot of sort of homage and honoring music of the past and bringing that into the present by reinventing them and also performing them and creating her own songs. And so if you don't know her music, I think you'll be really happily surprised to dig into her work. And if you do know it, it's always fun for me to get under the hood a bit and see what an artist's process is and get to ask some questions. So that's what you're going to hear. And at the end of this, I'm going to play a song called of hers called Have You Been to the Well? And it's a new song. I think it's going to come out around the time when this podcast was released. So this should be February 25th, 2020, depending on when you're listening to this. The mastered version is not what I have, so I'm going to do a little like mastering on it. But if you want to hear it in full fidelity, regardless, check out her music anywhere you do listen to music. Catch her on the road next time she's on the road. So like I said, I will talk to you more about the Australian tour. For those of you who did come out, thank you very much. I can't speak to it because it hasn't happened yet, and I'm recording it, even though it has happened. This is like a time travel type situation, folks. It's very super high tech. I have a plugin actually that I can activate for me to go back in time and then go forward in time. So get ready because I'm about to activate that. Thank you for reviewing this podcast. Giving it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, if that's where you listen to podcasts, does make a big difference. You can do that right now while I am gibbering and jabbering. Also, just sharing it with your friends helps this podcast become a sustainable venture for me to do because if there are people listening, it makes sense for me to do it. I think that's a logical situation. I do it because I enjoy it, so I'll probably do it, but it does take time and I have to be mindful at times about my time because sometimes I don't have that plugin where I can go back in time. And I have to remember that I have to make a living so that I can pay for more time machine plugins to make more music for you to do this crazy dance we're doing together. So if you are enjoying this and you find value in it, you can review it, you can share it, and you can let me know. You can write me at info@eastforest.org, and you can say hi on the socials at East Forest on Instagram and at East Forest Music on Facebook and Twitter. Okay, let's get into this. This is my conversation. I love saying her name because it makes me feel very sophisticated. Pia Luzzi. We crossed paths. I was trying to remember the name of the festival we both played at. It was quite a few years ago. It was on the East Coast.
Oh.
This is what I remember about the festival. Nako was playing, and it rained so hard that he had to stop after one song.
Yep.
And I had left the sunroof on my mother-in-law's car that was brand new open, and there was about 5 inches of water in the car. And I was trying to get the water out. And there was just a bunch of hippies around me saying things like, hey, man, it all happens for a reason. I was like, are you going to help? You can help me, brother, or you can step aside because I don't need to hear that right now. But that's where we met. I met you there briefly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. Look, I'm confident you've seen some things out there on the circuit, as have I. And it's like, there's a funny thing about sort of consciousness people. Mm. It's often sometimes I have the most issues.
Totally.
And then not necessarily interpersonally, but for working, like for festivals and playing music. And then I'm not trying to say this in a judgment way. If I do something corporate, it's often the opposite.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like you get paid on time. The communication is clear.
Right.
Not that I do that a lot, but if that ever comes up, I'm always struck by the stark difference in how it pans out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've kind of, in the States, at least in the West Coast, I've really kind of avoided the West Coast festival scene largely with a few high integrity festivals being the exception to that. But, you know, I still have encountered some things as I've traveled and in Europe and whatnot that just were so off the wall, bizarre. And I've recently started running a bit more in like folk music circles, and it's pretty incredible how just straight up and straightforward and kind people are. And there's none of the like spiritual veneer or any of that or proclamations. And I find it really refreshing, actually.
Yeah, like it's stripped of the clothing of the holiness, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, well, I have some questions about your music, but I'm just interested as a fellow musician about that, what you're just talking about, sort of navigating these spaces of duplicity and like all the masks that we wear, which are in all areas of our lives, right? Of course, not just in areas of spirituality. But when we make music that is deeply personal and vulnerable, and it's about sort of, in essence, kinds of connections and awakenings, do you find that that is challenging to kind of dance as it becomes a business world? You know, I'm assuming you do this as your living or part of your living.
I mean, music has been my living and my sole source of livelihood for several years now. It definitely is. It's a balancing act of both honoring the work that you're doing, being able to make a livelihood so that we can keep doing our work and keep putting our work out into the world, and then also giving back and knowing when to do something as a benefit because it's a cause that you believe in, and when to really put down your foot and know your worth and have clear boundaries around that. And, you know, for myself, I feel like I didn't really choose the path of spiritual music. It's just what came through me. It's just what comes through me. And as much as I would like to write a different type of song, that's just not what happens. And I think, and so there's a certain amount of just surrendering to, I guess, the channel, or surrendering to what it is that comes through me, and then simultaneously steering the ship, you know, and knowing where I want to put my energy and what communities and what working relationships feel healthy, and when they don't, you know, knowing how to gracefully and respectfully decline.
Is that sort of a litmus test, though, for you, the feeling? Because at the end of the day, I mean, what is the rudder that you use to keep yourself sailing straight to know, like, yeah, this is on my path versus this is not? Versus, obviously, there's going to be the obvious times, but there's sometimes it can get a little tricky.
Right.
You know, when you're navigating these spaces.
Yeah. I would say over the years, you know, because I only started working with like an agent and management 2 years ago. And so I was my own agent for 4 or 5 years, and having to have all those talks and negotiations. And so now I feel like I've developed a pretty keen sense of being able to kind of suss out someone based on their language and how they approach a conversation. And I've...
Yeah, you were in the trenches for a while. So you got, you have the scars to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed that I just really appreciate clear and direct communication. And especially when it gets into the financial arena, I feel like it's really important to be really clear about those agreements. Yeah. And so when somebody is being really wishy-washy, or, you know, they're agreeing to something and then going back on their word, you know, that sort of thing, that's when I will, my boundaries will start coming down. And it's funny, my agent, you know, sometimes we'll have like a new promoter approach us, and, you know, sometimes he'll forward me a conversation. And we had a couple times last year where I read the exchange and I was like, yeah, I don't think this is a good idea. But he was like, no, they really want to try. Let's move forward. And I remember at the end of the tour, he was like, you sussed out a few of those people ahead of time. Maybe it's a sixth sense. I don't know.
So tell me a little bit about how you got to this point, or maybe you've always been on it, where your music seems to explore the old. It has a lot of old traditions, not just of different cultures, but that seems to be a core element of the music that you're singing and making.
Yeah. Well...
Or the why, you know, what's the motivation for you?
That? Well, the why is definitely, you know, crystallized in the last couple of years, which is reconnecting to my own ancestral lineage through song and through storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly the why. But how I came to older traditions, I mean, I guess I would say I just always felt like I was born in the wrong time. And not to glorify, you know, medieval life, because there's certainly many, many things about that time period that I would not wish upon anyone
yes.
or any woman, especially. It was not as woke. But I think, whether I want to use the word, like, had some kind of old memory or an ancestral memory that was passed down. I think I just always had a sense that there was a time on this earth where there was a lasting peace, that we lived like in balance and, you know, both with each other and with our environment, and where we were deeply connected to the elements that give us life. And I don't know where that came from. I was raised in a non-religious family, but certainly a spiritual family. But where, you know, ideas about spirit and the universe and connection were very much a sort of a very deeply personal thing. You know, my dad, I would say, is someone who carried a lot of trauma, and as a result was someone who, you know, carried a lot of darkness in him, but then also had this quiet contemplative side. And I remember, you know, as a kid, just being in nature with him, and he was so deeply perceptive and quiet, and that was really felt like his holy place. And my mother is very much the same, you know, in her own way. And I remember asking her, "Mom, what's God?" And her answer was, you know, "Well, I can tell you what my experience of God is, but you really have to figure that out for yourself." And
what a great answer. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't know if that answers your question of why I was drawn to sort of old musics, but I think I maybe had the sense that there was another time where we had a different way of living, and And that by somehow being able to reach back through the bridge of time, that some of that could be brought here to this time.
Yeah. So how do you think then that the wisdom or the feeling or the medicine that's in those old songs speaks to today? Because I hear how it is sort of coming through your own lineage.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very personal experience. And is there a part of you that's sort of, because there's an intentionality for you of sort of taking them, you're transmitting them into today, into modernity.
Yeah. I would say it's something very subtle that is difficult to really put words to, because it's, you know, in a lot of these old melodies, the lyrics and things, or the language even, is different. You know, that's something that's evolved and changed with human consciousness. But the melodies often are intact. And there's something that's transmitted, some essence that I feel like can live in those melodies, which simultaneously can be, you know, a bridge or a link to another time, but also at the same time, those songs or melodies carry the history of everyone who's ever sung them and engaged with them. And so it's not something.
Do you think like the melody is like a spell? Like in the way we look at a mantra in the yogic tradition, in a sense, the melody itself is a technology, or the sounds of that particular mantra. It's not just the meaning of it. You know, the sound itself is a, there's a magic to it. I don't know what word to use.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about, you know, Indian classical rag, certainly like each rag has a different effect, a different weather pattern, a feeling that it evokes, you know, and they would say that like the great masters of rag could quite literally change the weather by singing a certain rag. And so I think that's a technology that maybe we've forgotten how to utilize it, and maybe forgotten that the whole world, all of this, you know, physical matter has vibration to it. And by engaging, you know, with physical with vibration through a song or sound, that we can actually affect our atmosphere or the world around us. And
but are you a yogi? Is that part of your practice, part of your life?
It's part of my practice. I would say it's, you know, it's not something that I engage in every day, especially being on the road a lot. And I call myself more of a nature yogi. And so, probably less inclined to go to a yoga class and more inclined to like get up into the mountains and go cross country skiing or hiking or that sort of thing.
You're in Southern Oregon.
Yeah.
It's home base.
Yeah.
I grew up in Salem, Oregon.
Oh.
And then I lived in Portland for a good spell. I don't anymore,
okay.
But my family's still in Oregon.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'd like to hear a little bit about your creative process in general. I'm always interested in other artists. And so when you are making music or creating music, what does that look like? Is it a form of improvisation, or is it more going back to old songs and riffing off that? Or,
well, it depends. Over the last few years, I've been much more focused on song gathering and reinterpreting old folk songs. Right now, the album that I'm working on is all traditional, you know, old traditional songs. And so, I'm in this process of researching different versions of all of these songs and listening to old source recordings, and then kind of crafting a sound palette, if you will, to translate the story of the song sonically and create the atmosphere that it feels like the song wants to live in. So that's one part of my creative process. And also, you know, when I'm learning a song that's in Scots Gaelic or in Irish, there's a lot of just nitty gritty, like learning to pronounce it and learning the translation in order to be able to deliver it in a way that feels like it gives meaning to the words and the lyrics as they move through the song. And then my writing process, as I kind of alluded to earlier, is a very fickle beast.
Isn't it always? Yes.
And, you know, I like to say, like, the muse strikes me when she wants to, and usually that's at the most inconvenient time. You know, I'm like driving in a car and really should not be trying to remember or record a melody, or I'm like running out the door to a class or something. And yeah, I always feel like when I write a song, it's always kind of fast and furious. It's like, I imagine I'm like grabbing the tail of a tiger and trying to wrestle it back towards me. And there's not much editing or changing. It's usually like it's there in 20 minutes and that's it, you know.
Well, it's funny you mentioned driving, because I've weirdly found that when I'm driving, it's an easier time for me to work with lyrics for the rare times I'm doing lyrical things. And I think it has something to do with your brain is engaged in one activity that it can't really stop, like the driving things. And it takes, so it's sort of something's a little bit offline and it can't get in the way. And that allows me to riff with my right brain in interesting ways. So I think there's actually something to that, you know, when we're engaged in other tasks, whether running out the door, like you said, or you're driving, it's like, it might not be convenient, but there might be a creative key there. I know for me, when it's too intentional, it's like all the, you light the candles and the thing. Okay. I set this time out and you're like, here we go. And you're like, hit record. It's like, I'm too self-conscious. Right. A lot of times when I'm working with other people, they want to, and there's nothing wrong with this, but they want to like have a moment before we start. And I'm often like, God, no, that's the last thing we should do. Let's just start. Like, stop talking about it. Let's just play around. Let's make noise. Like, that's where the magic is. And like, shouldn't we? I was doing this recording. Lorraine Weiss was playing saxophone on a track, and she came in and she said, shouldn't we do an invocation? Or call in the spirit of Maharaji. And I was like, he's here. Let's start. It's like, I'm scared. Oh my God, let's not talk too much about it. And of course, you know, she was completely inspired. I think there was something in just like shoving someone out the door. Like, go, just go. Don't think. Just do your magic.
There's something to be said for the flow state, you know, is like really getting out of our minds and getting into this, I guess you would call it beginner's mind. I know that before I really started writing songs, I was obsessed with improvising. And there was a number of years there where I would not make any music other than improvisational music. And I was part of a quartet while I was in Boston called Moment Quartet. That was two musicians and two dancers. And, you know, we might have like a very loose plan of like who's going to enter in what order. And that was about it, you know. And there was something so liberating about that experience of really kind of giving yourself over to the moment and kind of coming in completely disarmed in a way and with no preconceptions
totally
about what you're going to create, and just becoming like so present to the moment and responding, you know, to another human being or human beings and the atmosphere in a dialogue. And I hadn't done much of that at all in the last 5 years. And Estas Ton, who's a wonderful guitarist, came through and we did three shows together, and he's, you know, very much improvised in his concert. We might have like a loose theme or something that we're moving around, but we would have no plan of like how we're getting there or what we're doing once we get there, how we get out of it, you know, and, you know, performing on big stages in that kind of setting was so terrifying and so thrilling and liberating. And yeah, I really love improvisation.
I mean, to me, that's kind of when we're certainly making music, if you think about it, on some level, there's always some kind of improvisation because that's the muse, right? Otherwise, you're just reading music off a page.
Right.
And it's the magic. I mean, it really is. Like, I've gotten so hooked on, as a form of recording, just kind of being like, okay, look, I'm just going to sit down and try to come up with something. And hopefully I can get it down as an idea. And then maybe later on I'll add to it and things. But that initial sort of impulse, you want to capture some kind of something there that's bigger than you in a way. And just like you're saying, it's so pleasurable when it happens in a way that feels like you're getting out of the way. And it's a form of play. I saw the video of you performing. What's his name? The guitarist?
Estaston.
You guys were great. And it looked like what you're saying, like you're both sort of just being in the moment and responding, and there's a sense of playfulness to that.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, that level of playfulness and exploration and newness is available even when you're playing a song you've played 100 times. Like I find with my bandmates, you know, especially when you're on a 2-month tour, like you have to bring something a little new each night. And, you know, the way that I will sing this line or ornament, or, you know, like we're constantly playing and keeping it alive, because otherwise you go insane playing the same song, so, you know, for 10 years or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, you got quite a voice. You're a soprano. And do you see singing in any particular personalized, unique way? Like, do you see it as a form of channeling or any? I don't know if that's too far out there, but, or how do you view it? Like when you're singing, or, because I know your voice is kind of the central element of your work and it's very strong, and you're translating some of these old songs and you're making your own. There's something very sacred and old about that.
In terms of my voice, I was born with it, and I you know, I've certainly had a lot of training, but I was singing before I was talking. I used to, probably my earliest memories of singing in gibberish, sitting in my car seat waiting for my mom to come out from the house. And, you know, so there's something that I just came in with, and my sister as well, which is sort of freakish in that we didn't come from a musical family whatsoever. And, you know, nobody sings really in our family that we're aware of. But then in terms of my experience, and also, you know, how I approach teaching singing, when I'm singing, I'm not there anymore. And I kind of feel like, you know, me as Pia steps aside and the song moves in, and I'm just a vessel. And so I'm kind of having the experience of being sung. And, you know, so in terms of how I approach my own technique, I mean, my technique is really just about anchoring myself, which that was something I had to really learn how to do, because it used to be when I would start singing, I'd be kind of floating around somewhere up here out of my body, and I couldn't get my hands to work to play instruments. So it took a lot of work to learn how to stay grounded and not kind of fly out of my own body.
Right.
And, you know, and then of course, lots of practice to keep the hands moving and play the instruments and not have to think, because then of course then comes in and takes you out of the song. And so, you know, my practice became very much around grounding myself through my breath and really cultivating like a strong container for the sound to move through. And then, you know, the rest of the technique in terms of what's happening in the throat and in the mouth and everything is just about opening up and getting out of the way, really. And so there's lots of, you know, more specific techniques and ways of opening up and of getting out of the way, and the ways in which we can close down the voice or shut down the voice are so numerous.
It's so hard though, you know, singing, because I always say that singing is a mental game. And, you know, for me, I have to, that's the number one thing. I have to just like be, I can think my way into all sorts of problems about singing. Like, I don't have a voice like you, but I certainly did lots and lots of vocal training. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I learned too much in a way, right? Like, I was like, I did the opposite with piano. I know nothing. I just kept playing and trying to learn stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel a certain level of like, I just do what I do because I don't know even what I don't, no one ever said you have to have your hand this way or the fingers that way. I don't know. I just do it. The voice is the opposite. I'm constantly thinking in my mind, oh, you got this, you're doing that wrong, and you should do this. And I'm like, and then when I stop thinking, as you said, you just sing. And you let something through is where the magic is. So I don't know about you, but it feels like the mind, it's a mental game because your voice is your body. Mm-hmm. Like you are the instrument. Mm-hmm. It's not just the voice here in your throat. It's the whole body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you figured something out. So
I had to do a lot of unlearning after my operatic training in college because, you know, so much of that was really kind of coming from left brain, and I would say a lot of it to me felt like over singing and over producing the voice and trying to cultivate a voice that for me felt really unnatural. And so, yeah, I feel like one of the things that I'll often say to my students is, you know, we're passive in the throat. If you think about the throat being open like a flute that you're just allowing the wind to pass through, and that you're active in your low belly and in your core to give you that breath support and that strength. But that, like, you know, from here up, you're just thinking open and expanded, you know, as much as possible. And yeah, I feel like I still have a ways to go to undo some of my operatic training, and some of it I welcome as well. But, you know, I feel like there's nothing more beautiful than just a natural, untrained voice.
Man, I remember many years ago, before I was doing the East Forest thing, I was just in a band, kind of doing the piano pop thing. And I was struggling as a singer. I even went to a hypnotist. And it's like, I tried to get a hypnotist to tell me, you know, to start to trick my, I don't know, I felt like there was some kind of mental block. And I needed to work with like those subtle layers of my brain to hypnotize myself into being a better singer. It didn't work, but, or maybe it did. It just took a long time. I don't know.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've had to learn as a singer is that we all have a different instrument, you know, and some people have these really deep, rich, velvety, earthy instruments, and some people have these really high-pitched piccolo voices. And I know for myself, sometimes I've like wished that I was one of those people that had like a richer, deeper tone at certain moments. And it's definitely something that I notice with my students as well, where I feel like the more you're able to just learn both the strengths and the confines of the instrument that you were given, that then you can work with it in a way that, you know, really relies on your strengths and maybe, you know, occasionally dips into those weaker points. And maybe that's even something that you use intentionally as a part of your artistic interpretation. But I mean, I always say that if you can speak, you can sing. And It's something I love so much about the Irish singing tradition is like there's no concept of singers and non-singers. Like everybody has a song, and you will hear, you know, brilliant large voices, and you will hear, you know, really quiet, tender, small voices, and you'll hear grandmothers who can barely carry a tune anymore. But it's singing is so much more about telling a story in that tradition that, you know, the quality of the singer is less important. It's more about how you portray the story and what you're saying.
Definitely. I mean, it's such a great point that the voice we're given, it's like a snowflake. They are totally unique, and it is a kind of window into the soul. It's just who you are. And I don't know how you worded it. Was it using sort of like the parameters of what you have in a sense versus trying to sound like somebody else? And that's a really big thing for singers to recognize and accept as a gift at first. It's like, oh no, I can work with what I have as opposed to trying to be sounding like this person or that person and struggling with that comparison. Yeah. Do you see your music connected or as a form of activism?
I mean, I feel like all art for that matter has the potential to, you know, be a commentary on society and on, the state of the world. And so, you know, I guess for myself, I feel like activism really has, or what I define as activism maybe has more of a hands-on or like a solid effect. And so I'm certainly not really engaging in direct activism with my music, though I would be open to. But I would say that folk music has always been the music of the people. And I don't remember whose quote it was, but that's that the role of a folk musician is to like shake up the rich and to soothe the poor. And so I would certainly say that in the role of storytelling and story keeping or song keeping, and also the role of giving voice to injustice and kind of calling out oppression or calling for change. I very much do resonate with that role as a musician.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're singing to the parts of our humanity in our hearts that hopefully remind us of our connection to one another. The folk songs are, to me, songs of story. And perhaps, like you said, you believe that they're transmitting some kind of like childlike, some kind of peace that existed that we've lost today. And perhaps by singing and telling those old stories, you're helping to craft a new story that is also sort of an old story.
Yeah, I think humanity has to, we have to be able to look back and know where we've come from, both the dark and the light of it, you know, both understanding the beauty of evolution and also the atrocities and genocides and awful things that have happened, because by looking back, I feel like we're able to make a different choice or see that we're heading in a certain direction. That's a cycle we've already been playing out, and to say, no, we're not going down that road this time. And so, I do think it's important to be able to use music as a tool for storytelling and understanding who we are and in the greater scheme of things.
Well, there must be a part of you that really sees like those old stories as an anecdote in a sense. It's a part of you of deep knowing, clearly, whether it's from your, as you said, your lineage or your soul's remembrance or past lives or none of that, even just sort of there's a knowing in you that's like there's some kind of message there for us to hear now.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could comment on that, but to be honest, I feel like it's not even an intellectual choice that I've made. It's just following where I've been drawn and where I feel like I've been led and being willing to show up and do the work to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm in total agreement. I believe that it's exactly that. You're just following your own bliss, and that is the path. Mm-hmm. But are you hopeful? Are you feeling hopeful about all of it? Like, I know as an artist, sometimes, like, it's, as you said, all art is truly, it's a form of activism and inspiration, because it's sort of painting about the mystery, right? And it's the things that we can't always just speak to. And that's really important. And, you know, you're preaching to the choir on that one. Mm-hmm. I believe that as well. But I also am always, there's so much going on in the world. And as we go around and sing our songs and carry these to different communities and people, how do you feel? How are you feeling? Mm.
Well, I would say that I believe firmly in human goodness and in kindness. And, you know, as we travel around, we're shown so much kindness and generosity, you know, by the people who host us and come to our shows. And it's such an incredible outpouring of love and support. And so, I mean, actually touring often like re-inspires my hope in humanity, because we're watching the news and paying attention, there is so much going on right now, you know, both in the way we're treating each other and then, you know, in what we're doing to our planet, that could just really make one feel hopeless. And I certainly have my days of just feeling the enormity of the challenge that we're facing and feeling a lot of despair. And I allow myself to feel those things and also to keep moving and put it into the music and put it into the song. And I have a deep faith in humanity and in the intelligence of our planet and the intelligence of the natural world, that, you know, I think the earth is going to swallow all of us one day, just in our own time. And whether that is through some huge disaster or just through the natural, you know, cycle of life and death, either way, we're all going back to her. So I don't know that there's so much that we have to worry about in that.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us. What is the best way for people to find you and hear the music of Most Importance, or see you live, or get into this world?
So I have a website, which is piasong.com. And Pia is spelled P-E-I-A. And then, of course, the music's on iTunes and Spotify. I have a YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram. I'm a millennial. So.
And you're on the road. You are touring.
I'm actually at the moment, I'm home. I'm working on an album. And that'll be coming out in September. We'll be returning to Europe to tour late August through early October. We'll be doing a West Coast run in November. I have a short film that's coming out about my process of reconnecting to my ancestral song tradition. And so lots ahead and in the year to come.
Yeah, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful to get to know you a little better from the Unifier Festival. it didn't really happen there, so this is much better.
Likewise, nice to meet you.
Well, thank you, Pia Luzzi. Thank you, Pia. I really enjoyed that. And she's a lovely artist and a lovely human being. So please check out her music. And this song you're hearing in the background is hers. So I'm going to stop talking so you can hear it. Thanks for reviewing the podcast. Thanks for being what you do. Thanks for all you guys who came out on the tour. Tell you more soon. You keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit, but if you do, do it with grace.